There goes Lance in the open field. 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown! Oh, baby, this kid's pretty good.
You're listening to Bison Report Radio, presented by 24/7 Sports.
The Thunderdome, especially on homecoming, is just not something that you want to allow to get rocking, and they really, really did.
I don't think you could ask for any better. Maybe one more completion to go 11 for 11, but that kid was fun to watch.
Their wing spot is pretty loaded. I mean, you got Jared's going to play. I mean, he's as solid as it gets at the two spot.
Here's your host, publisher of Bison Report, Ross Uglum.
What is up, Bison fans? This is your preview edition of North Dakota State's upcoming game against Bo Pelini and Youngstown State. Before we dive into the football end of things, North Dakota State tipped off their basketball season last night with a massive 104-63 victory over Dickinson State in an exhibition game. Fun thing about exhibition games, obviously, is that, you know, the red shirt rules don't apply, so you got to see Malik Hardin-Hayes, got to see Noah Christensen get a little bit of time, and really an efficient night for NDSU from the field, shooting 60% for the game, including a 14-28, which is obviously 50% from the three-point line. These guys were really, really electric with the ball. It didn't stick. The ball moved. There wasn't a ton of dribbling, a lot of passes, a lot of shots, and really an up-tempo style of basketball where all five guys can put it on the floor and all five guys can shoot it. An exciting and entertaining brand of basketball, certainly. And the pregame stuff for Landon's Light was just awesome. I don't know if any of you were there, but the team had magic wands like for Harry Potter and had lights on the end of those wands, and the crowd lit up their smartphone flashlights and they did a little tribute, and it was just a really cool thing. Like Coach Richmond said to the end of the game, you could tell how much the Solbergs meant to the community, and you could tell how much the community meant to the Solbergs. So it was a really touching way to kind of not necessarily put a bow on everything, but to honor Landon with him having been such an inspiration last year, and then for him, you know, to have lost him and his battle with cancer moving up into this season. It was just a really cool thing. And obviously thank you to Gate City and their corporate sponsors that sponsored that game last night and donated money to help combat childhood cancer, because, as you know, Coach Richmond said a number of times, and I've said as well, there are things bigger than basketball and bigger than sports, and beating childhood cancer is certainly one of them. A little bit of news today. Nick Radins, Dylan Radins' younger brother, who is kind of a center or a guard prospect in football, has spent time at the North Dakota State School of Science in Wahpeton playing JUCO ball. Was named a JUCO All-American, and has now agreed to walk on. So he'll be a 3-for-2, meaning that he's got 3 years with two eligible after 2 years at NDSCS. He's about 6'4", about a thick kid, somebody that I think, like I said, they see as a center, a guard, doesn't have quite his brother's height. So, is probably not a candidate to play tackle, but somebody that, if he does redshirt, you know, is going to maybe give them a bridge year or two, as guys like Nash Jensen, Carson Schoening, and Kubis graduate, because he does have, you know, a year beyond those guys. And just a really, really honestly impressive, really impressive walk-on group. You know, North Dakota State isn't going to have a ton of money when they only graduate 14 seniors. They're not going to have a huge recruiting class, but they have some really, really impressive kids that have agreed to walk onto the program. And as we see this year, especially specifically in the defensive tackle and the fullback group, they have big-time players walking onto the program and are guys that make significant impacts week in and week out. Trevor and I are going to get to the Youngstown State preview in just a second, but right now I want to play a fantastic interview. I had a chance to sit down with Mike linebacker Jackson Hankey. Jackson is one of those walk-ons, played at Park River, was not really recruited by a ton of schools, but knew that he had an opportunity to come down to North Dakota State and try and earn a spot. and was just a kid that, you know, you couldn't get his name out of Coach Kleiman and Coach Entz's mouth when he was on scout team. They just raved about him. Was a guy that they knew. They knew he was going to be part of the plan, and you know, now he's a part of the plan, and he's starting next to Aaron Mercadal and obviously Jabril Cox. So, well, let's play my interview with Jackson Hanke right now.
Here with Bison redshirt sophomore linebacker Jackson Hanke. Jackson, how are we doing?
Doing well.
Let's rewind a little bit and talk about your time kind of coming up in this defense. The Mike linebacker is a spot I think that is really identified by fans and kind of everybody else with this defense. You go back in time, talk about a guy like Joe Mays, talk about a guy like Nick DeLuca. I mean, big shoes to fill, certainly. What did kind of getting assigned to that spot when you got on campus mean to you?
I meant a lot. You know, the nature of the Mike linebacker position is you got to be very smart, and you got to be a tough and physical player. And you know, those are the two of the aspects that I really want my game to identify with. So you know, obviously it was flattering. So
who were some of the guys that you learned from right away? Because I think a lot of people recognize the name Jackson Hanke because during your first year, you know, when you're on scout team, coaches couldn't keep your name out of their mouths. I mean, you played well.
Nick was a big one. You know, he taught me a lot my freshman year, and then after he left, you know, Dan Marlette and even Levi Jordheim, those guys, you know, they answered every question I had for them. So they definitely had a big role in my development as a player. So,
fast forward a little bit to spring ball this year, and you're kind of installed as the starter. And part of that might have been, you know, maybe some guys were nursing injuries or whatever from being a part of that championship run. But what was it like kind of leading the defense and knowing that with Dan having graduated, it was going to kind of be your show?
You know, it wasn't much different than what I've been doing for a few years here now. You know, I mean, it's the same reps that you're taking. It's all that. It's just that your name's at the top of the depth chart. You know, I'd always been, since I came here, you know, this was the year I'd been eyeing down as the year where I'd get to start. And to see that become a reality was definitely, you know, a very positive thing. So
seems kind of simple, but I would guess a lot of hard work went into making that really happen.
It did. And you know, the hard work wasn't, you know, necessarily what I thought it would be coming in. It was much more mental than you know, a lot of times physical. But you know, I was definitely surprised by that. You know, there's a big learning curve, and to get on the field quickly, you need to be able to, you know, understand defense and to execute your assignment. And that's, you know, that's what I kind of put my hard work into, and definitely paid off for me. So
on the mental side of things, how big was Coach Entz? You know, obviously your first 2 years on campus, you had the defensive coordinator as your position coach.
Yeah, I mean, of course that's helpful. You know, you kind of get an idea of more of an idea behind the game plan than just, you know, each person's assignment. So, you know, it, and for me, the type of learner that I am, it helps me to understand what everybody else is doing in order to know where I fit into the defense. So he did a very good job of not just coaching positions, but coaching scheme and coaching, you know, the overall, what the defense is trying to accomplish. So
Grant Olson is somebody that I think is, you know, as close to legendary status as you're going to get around here, especially with the 27 tackle game and things like that. What has been the difference, you know, losing your position coach, obviously, to the head spot, but having someone with the gravitas and the experience that Gio has, not only in this defense, but at this university?
Yeah, it definitely adds a level of, you know, it's easier to take criticism from somebody who's been here and who's done what we've done, you know, who's done workouts with Kramer in the summer, who's played in this defense, who's done all of those things. You know, it's easier to take criticism from somebody like that and to learn from somebody like that who understands, you know, what it's like to be in our shoes and to do so very successfully. So it adds a lot of credibility to him as a coach.
You kind of came in to full-time play with some other guys that hadn't played a ton in the defense. How do you think Merck and James are doing?
They're doing very well. Merck has played, has had a really good last couple games. He's done a really nice job. And, you know, James transitioning from strong safety to Will linebacker has done a very good job as well. He's still learning, but the thing about James is that he plays very hard. You know, he is a very talented football player. He might not always be correct in what he's doing, but he's gonna find a way to the ball. So that's kind of, you know, I've always had a lot of respect for his game, and you know, I think that's a big reason why he gets to see the field. So,
how many times a week or a month do you see, whether it's in a practice or in a game, where you watch Jabril Cox do something that you just kind of?
It's pretty frequent. I mean, sometimes it's a couple times a week. You know, a lot of times in games, if he runs somebody down or, you know, does one of his athletic feats that seems impossible to me. But, yeah, it's pretty frequent, so.
Playing the mic, you get some pretty first-hand experience as to how the defensive tackles are playing in front of you, and a lot of those are younger guys.
Yep.
Who do you think has really stepped up this season, and how do you feel like some of those young guys are playing? Because, you know, a lot of them are walk-on guys, yeah, like Matt and Costner, certainly.
You know, there was definitely a concern about depth with that group coming in, but I cannot praise those guys enough, because our success, I mean, it really starts with them, you know. And our ability to make an offense one-dimensional completely starts with those guys up front. You know, there's been several games this year where, you know, it may not always show or they may not always get praised for it, but those guys dominate the line of scrimmage. And, you know, Cole Karch and Jack are the kind of the ones people know. Those guys do a fantastic job. But Matt Beagler and Costner Ching, those guys have played really, really, really good football in the last few games. And to be able to count on them to rotate and perform at a very high level is definitely crucial to our defense. And, you know, Lane Tucker, and we've got other young DNs that are playing and doing a nice job. And, you know, I cannot credit those guys enough.
A game like Saturday, the reason a North Dakota kid like you comes to North Dakota State?
Well, for sure. Now, you know, that's a bit of an interesting question. You know, I wasn't recruited, to be honest, by a whole lot of other places.
Sure.
So this is where I always wanted to play in general, but, you know, to say that, you know, I wasn't recruited by SDSU, I can't, you know, speak poorly of them or hardly UND for that matter. So I came here because it was the highest level of football that offered me to play. So,
absolutely. Moving forward, what have you seen from Youngstown State on tape, from Nathan Mays? I mean, what are you expecting in that environment? It's going to be a night game. You know, it's going to be cold. It's something that you guys don't play in that time. I mean, people would think North Dakota State play in the cold all the time, but it's 70 and sunny in here.
Yeah. No, it'll be a lot of fun, I think. You know, I've heard that I've never actually been down there. My redshirt freshman year was the last time we were down there, and I didn't travel that year. So I'm excited to get down there and see it firsthand. But I think they're talented. They got a talented team, a talented offense. I think they're very good schematically. You know, they've got some good plays and some good athletes that can confuse you at times, and you know, they do a good job of creating offense and running with their quarterback and creating advantages that way, and some RPO stuff. And, you know, I it's going to be a challenge for sure, but you know, we're excited for it. You know, every week's a challenge in this league, and you know, it's a new flavor with them, something we haven't really quite seen so much this year, but I'm excited for it. So,
do you have a favorite call defensively? And if you do, what's your role on that play?
I do have a favorite call. My favorite call would be anything in which we run cover zero. So everybody who is not man coverage is blitzing. And in which call, I am not one of the blitzers, but I am in man coverage. And, you know, it's a very good call to stop run game. You know, it's a very good 3rd-and-1, 4th-and-1 call. And it's my favorite call because it's very simple. You know, you have your guy and you own him man-to-man, and if they run the football, the guy that you own is your run fit. So, you know, it's a very simple call and allows us to play very fast. So if I had to pick one favorite call, that's probably definitely it.
Awesome. Finish the sentence for me and I'll let you go. North Dakota State wins on Saturday.
North Dakota State wins on Saturday. if the defense does their job and plays to the level we have recently, if we can make Youngstown State's offense one-dimensional, make them have to throw the ball against us, and we win if our offense continues to play well and continues to run the football and dominate the line of scrimmage and the time of possession.
All right, we want to thank the North Dakota State Sports Information Department for making Jackson available to us, and obviously thank Jackson for his time. I thought, you know, he kind of brought us behind the scenes a little bit there, talking about some of his favorite stuff to run and what he likes to do when he plays. I thought that, you know, like I said, he was an interesting study as far as his path to North Dakota State, and it's one that a lot of guys take, and it's one that a lot of successful guys take. I'm going to bring on now our football analyst, our lead football analyst, Trevor Gebhardt with the Bison Report. Trevor, how are we doing, buddy?
We're doing good in the South, Ross. Kind of a rainy day here on Halloween, but we're doing pretty good otherwise.
Yeah, Ev's not quite ready to crawl around and trick-or-treat.
No, she's definitely a year away, so we'll get there.
I want to ask you if you remember the 2017 game out in Youngstown. It was kind of Jabril Cox's coming out party. He was a freshman, obviously, but they inserted him into the lineup, and he made just some massive plays in that game. I'll never forget that day specifically just because we were down in Kansas State, and it was that game against TCU that had two separate weather delays for lightning. So we were actually at Kansas State Stadium for like 8.5 hours and then got home and turned on this game with Youngstown State and NDSU that ends in overtime, and it's a field goal thing. But do you remember anything about that 17 game?
Definitely the Jabril Cox coming out party. I want to say he had – do you have a pick that game? Maybe a pick six? I guess I don't remember exactly, but
the play that I remember, and again, this, you know, you and I were getting old a little bit here, but the play that I remember, I think, was a big time tackle for a loss and might have even potentially been a forced fumble, but I don't know if I necessarily remember an interception.
Okay.
Looking at the individual defensive statistics for that game. So Jabril Cox had, wow, okay. Jabril Cox had, so DeLuca had 12 tackles and Jabril had 8. Jabril had 3 tackles for a loss, including 2 sacks.
Okay, that's not a bad day at the office. I mean, I definitely remember him vividly flying around, and there was a wow factor. So he knew the kid was going to be special. I do remember that. And then I remember a touchdown by RJ Erzendowski that got reviewed and upheld. And that was a phenomenal one-hander catch in the back of the end zone, maybe in the corner.
Yeah, that was nuts. I remember that as well.
So shout out to my boy Erz on that. Hopefully he's listening. And those are the two things I remember.
And to the go-ahead was and McCaster obviously tied the game up, and then Cam Peterson won it in overtime. But yep, the go-ahead touchdown was an 80-yard Easton stick run.
Oh, yes.
That I remember very vividly as well.
Yep.
He actually had 172 on the ground that day to pace North Dakota State, you know, on the ground. But that was one of the better Nathan Mays games we've seen, 11 for 15 for 188 and 113 on the ground. I mean, legitimately, that was probably, I would say, Nathan's best game potentially in a Youngstown uniform, and lo and behold, and they would say the same thing. In fact, Bo Pelini did say the same thing. He said something along the lines of, I swear Jabril Cox was at NDSU when I was in grade school. But as sick as we might be of Nathan Mays, I guarantee you that Pelini feels that same way about Jabril Cox. And if he doesn't leave for the league early, he's going to have to feel it next year as well. But Mays is an interesting kind of topic. You know, obviously having played in 2017, he now has this tremendous depth and breadth of experience, but it's not necessarily all good experience as far as, you know, his success rate. I would say Youngstown State as a whole has probably underachieved, likely, yeah, you know, underachieved during kind of his reign there, his time there. Obviously, their championship appearance having been in 2016 before he was kind of part of the game. But you look at, you know, his box score this season, and granted, they mentioned some, you know, lower body stuff where maybe he's not completely right, but it's very run of the mill. It's very kind of average stuff. 3.6 a carry, and he carries it plenty. In fact, he's got 83 rushes, which is second on the team, only to Joe Alessi. And then he's completing about 61% of his passes, as a 13 touchdown to 4 interception ratio. So, you know, kind of your standard stuff. It's certainly not the 16-0 ratio like Lance. He doesn't run the ball like Lance, but he's a veteran quarterback, and that's a big deal, especially in kind of a late game like this. What are your thoughts on Mays, and what's it kind of like for a defense? You've mentioned some guys, you know, that just kind of got it done, that you matched, not necessarily matched up with because you played offense, but guys that you just dealt with that it seemed like your entire career, guys like Austin Sumner or even Matt Brown.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, I would even put Matt Brown at Illinois State and Austin Sumner, of course, South Dakota State. I think they're probably two, maybe three notches above where Nathan Mays currently lives. I mean, Nathan Mays, he's not a terrible quarterback by any means, but like you said, run of the mill is very accurate. And I think his play very much epitomizes where Youngstown State football currently lives. In 2016, they obviously made the national championship run, seemingly out of nowhere. But again, you are a Valley team. They had favorable matchups, and they had a favorable playoff draw, and ended up making it to Frisco on one of the craziest plays I've seen at Eastern Washington. But you look at what they did the next season, and I started laughing at this when I saw it, because I was in my head, I'm thinking, this is perfect. So if you look at their 2017 season, this describes Youngstown State football. It's up and down, up and down, up and down. You have the really good, and then you have the really bad, and then you have in between, and that's just where they live. So 2017, you look at the month of September, they were undefeated with the exception of losing to Pittsburgh by 7 in overtime. They seem to always play Pittsburgh tough. I don't know if they played them this year or not, but again, they beat them in 2012, which I think is Pittsburgh's only FCS loss in their program's history. And then you go into the month of October in 2017. They lost every single game. Every one. They lost 3 of them by single digits. They lost at USD by 3. They lost to North Dakota State at home by 3 in overtime, which is, of course, the game we referenced. And then they went back on the road to Northern Iowa and lost by 5. Well, it's an emotional roller coaster. They come home, they play Illinois State, and they lose 35-0. And then they go into November, and then they go undefeated, just cranking out double-digit wins. They beat Indiana State 66-24. Missouri State was the last game of the season. They won by 28 points, 38-10, and then in between there on the road at Southern Illinois, 28-20. So a lot of up and down, and that is exactly who Nathan Mays is. I mean, he's got a 13-4 touchdown interception ratio, 61% completion percentage, which is pretty good, but he's not a guy that's going to throw for 250 and 3 snacks. I mean, there will certainly be better quarterbacks that NDSU will face. Now, again, this game would make Youngstown State season. So is he a type of kid that's a gamer and will rise to the occasion? I don't know. He hasn't necessarily done that, but is he capable of it too, to kind of pull one out and put a stamp on his career? This could be that defining moment. So it'll be interesting to see what type of player comes out. But I think you need to prepare for the worst. It's not necessarily the best way to put it, but prepare for his best, aka the worst for NDSU, of him being a gamer and showing out.
Yeah, and I think that, like, you know, we said, that 188-yard performance with 2 touchdowns and no picks, might have been the game of his life, as far as when you throw the opponent in and you know, run of the mill. I mean, that's what you're talking about. But this is a typical Pelini team in that it's defined by the defense, and that is something that, you know, we've seen over and over again with this Youngstown State squad, whether, you know, it was the Rivers and Moss defensive end tandem, but, you know, always physical, big dudes, physical dudes, usually pretty big defensive backs. In general, they've had, you know, safeties that hit, corners that press. They're going to try and disrupt what you do offensively and hold it in the game, you know, hold the game close and pray to God their offense doesn't blow it. And that's kind of was sometimes, you know, Pelini's problem at Nebraska as well. But right now, 17th in the country in total defense, 27th in scoring defense. They just kind of play Pelini ball.
That's, I mean, any Bo Pelini coach team, it is what it is. It was like that at Nebraska. It's been like that at Youngstown State. And every once in a while, they get a good squad like in 2016 where they can make a run. I don't think this is the team to do it. You look at their 2016 year, they were 6-2 in the Valley. They're already 1-3 and nothing really.
And really, really unimpressive non-conference. Really unimpressive.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the scores that the offense put up, is okay, that might open some eyes, but you look at the opponents that are associated with that, and you're like, okay, I understand why you put up 54 against Howard. I mean, shout out to our fellow Bison there over at Howard, but then you got Duquesne. Not exactly a team that's going to raise eyebrows on Saturdays with their play. And then Robert Morris, which we've seen them a few times. They win 45-10. It's good, but it's not great for what you would think is a threat on the road. Now, like I said, this game would make their season, so I think they're gearing up for it. And I personally think they need to have this win to make the playoffs. Because if they don't beat NDSU, they have to win out, which would put them at, what, I think 8-4. So they give themselves a hope being 4-4 in conference winning out. But I think if they win this game, they could afford to drop one more of their final three, which they're on the road at USD, on the road at Indiana State, and then they're home against Illinois State. I think they drop one within that. So for me, it's going, they've got to have this to save their season. And you go back to what I was referencing in 2017, they're kind of on that path. They've kind of gone to their low. They opened up in week zero with a win against Samford, which was the FCS kickoff game for those fans that watched that. And then they went undefeated through September, so they were 4-0 in non-conference. Not bad, but then they opened up Valley play 0-3 on the road at Northern Iowa, at home against SDSU, and then on the road at Southern Illinois and got smoked. Then they come back last week, beat Western Illinois pretty good, but Western Illinois isn't exactly doing anything well this season, being winless. So they seem to be on that upswing, and it's just going to be a matter of, okay, does this Bo Pelini defense shine like the way that guy can coach his players? They seem to get up for one game a year, and obviously this, I think, would be it. But doesn't – I don't know. Historically, you would say at Youngstown it's going to be a close game. And it very well could be, but I just don't see the dudes on the defensive side of the ball that I've seen in years past that could cause some trouble.
Yeah, and that's kind of the thing is you're looking for the dogs. Like Rivers and Moss were legit NFL prospect guys burning off the edge, and they've got some pass rushers that we'll talk about in a second here. But let's kind of address the defensive side of the ball for the Bison, because I think they've got kind of some specific things that need to get done. And number one, I think, is to shut down Jeremiah Braswell. And the reason I say that is because the guy has more than double the touchdowns of anybody else on his team and just about double the yards of anybody else on his team, and is a legit 21 plus yards per reception guy, and you just don't see guys averaging over 21 yards a catch. This guy is a game breaker. He's a game changer. His long this year is 75 yards. He is, you know, also not only is a deep threat, he's leading the team in receiving. He has more catches than anybody else on the team. I think personally, I think he gets the Josh Hayes treatment. I think if I'm calling the defense, and it, this hasn't been what they've done. I mean, from what Josh told me on BRTV last week, he and Marquise basically just decide each series, you know, are they taking left or right? They're not worried about field or boundary or sticking Josh on the number one or Marquise on the number one. They're just playing, you know, basically rock, paper, scissors and deciding which corner plays, excuse me, which side. I personally would put Hayes on Braswell and take him out of the game. That would be what I'd do. I'd give him the old C.J. Smith treatment because if he can't beat NDSU over the top, then the entire field becomes condensed, and you can focus on guys like Alessi. You can focus on the QB run with Nathan Mays, and you can kind of muck it up a little bit. I think they'll be able to muck it up anyway, but you saw what the quarterback run and what all those plays that kind of ride the mesh, running option, running read. You know, South Dakota State was able to beat up on NDSU a little bit with QB run, with option run, with zone run, and getting these defensive linemen kind of wide. And that's something that Youngstown will do as well. They'll have, you know, Mays with Alessi, and he'll stick the ball in his gut and ride it until he finds a break in the mesh. And I just think that the number one thing they need to do is make sure that Braswell doesn't make the passing game a legitimate threat, and they can just focus on shutting down Alessi and Mays.
They'll go to Braswell early. You know, the only difference, what was that receiver's name from Northern Iowa? Number 80.
He's
tall, and Braswell is 6 feet. So you have the height difference there, which is a huge thing. What's his name again? I'm sorry. Northern Iowa. Weston.
Yeah. Isaiah Weston was the big kid for UNI, and he was winning not necessarily with just blazing speed. He was right. A height mismatch. I think the kid was 6'4", and he was really honestly very good at high-pointing the football.
So here's what Youngstown's going to do. They're going to look at tape and think that the corners can get beat because of that. And it's like, well, it's purely a height issue. And Braswell is not 6'6". He's 6 feet. You know, he's 210. He's a physical receiver. He knows how to get open, clearly, based on the amount of targets and the disparity there with how heavy – his yards and receptions are in comparison to everybody else. But you got Mays who can be a little bit of dual threat. So clearly they're going to find ways to be creative there. So they're not relying on Alessi as much. And then they're going to find ways to get Braswell open. I think they'll do that early, because anytime you have a guy like that can take the top off right away, I think you got to do it in a game like this. You got to take a shot early. You got to get momentum going. You have a night game at home, and this can make or break your season. So you're going to have to lock him down and shut him down right away, and so he doesn't get in the flow, because if receivers can get in the flow early, it can get dangerous. So you want to get Mays out of a funk, because he's showing instances of being a gamer. So if him and Braswell are connecting early, that could cause some trouble. Now, just because they complete one right away doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be lights out, but you just got to make sure you're adjusting and getting physical with a physical receiver.
Yeah, I remember the Montana State playoff game where the first play of the game was a 71-yard bomb, and that's kind of the type of play call that you might see from Youngstown. I absolutely agree. When you've got a burner like that, a guy who is kind of a problem causer, maybe your best bet is to steal one and be up 7-0 early, and try and kind of get North Dakota State into a negative game script, because if you can do that, it puts pressure on Trey Lance, which, you know, is not necessarily always the path to winning, because Trey's pretty good, but it's better than nothing, you know. And like you said, he's a guy that definitely gets deep and is a threat to score pretty much any time he touches the ball. Another guy who is a threat to score pretty much every time he touches the ball is our guest at this time. I had a chance to sit down with senior tailback Ty Brooks, talk about his run of good luck in Brookings after, you know, strong performances in both 2017 and 2019. We had a chance to chat a little bit on, you know, whether time is slowing down with him starting to realize he only has a couple more games left in the Bison uniform, and just kind of chat about ball a little bit and some of the things he likes to run offensively. Talked about his backfield mate, Adam Cofield. And I think you guys are really going to enjoy this. So we'll play our interview with Ty right now.
Oh yeah, I'm straight. I didn't know he was on yet.
Here with Bison senior tailback, Ty Brooks. Ty, how are we doing?
I'm good. How about yourself?
I'm great, man. Is South Dakota State, is that your favorite place to play at outside of the Fargo Dome? Because you've kind of torn that place to shreds.
I don't know if it's my favorite place. Kind of take it personal when we play them. Just take it to a whole nother level. And that's something I probably should do with every game, but it's personal when we play them.
That makes a lot of sense. What do you feel like the offense did well, and what do you feel like you guys struggled with a little bit? Because I think the final numbers, 396 yards of offense, you're going to take that most days, but I'm not sure scoring-wise you guys were as efficient as you hoped. Maybe not through the air as efficient as you hoped. What can you kind of improve on moving forward?
I feel like we ran the ball really well. Offensive line did a great job up front, opening some stuff, taking stuff from meetings and just applying it to the game. The stuff we got to clean up, I think, was penalties. Kind of limited ourselves in the red zone, kind of brought us back out kicking field goals probably when we should have scored touchdowns.
I would say last week was as emotional of a victory as you're going to find. You get college game day there. It's your number one rival. It's on the road. You win in that way. How do you guys as a team approach this week and try and get back up?
Yeah, I was talking to Brillo before the game. I was like, it feels like Frisco out here. Like, the fans were crazy. It was loud. The atmosphere is crazy. But after Sunday hits, it's over with. 24-hour rule. That's what we try to preach to the younger guys. Just reset. It's a whole new week. Try to go 1-0 for the week.
Speaking of that last call, I was on the sideline. I was with Trevor Gebhardt, who obviously used to play here. We were both convinced. Quarterback sneak. Trey is 6'3", 240. There's no way they're going to stop him. You need 6 inches. They're going to sneak the ball. Were you in the huddle? I mean, kind of describe that, and then, you know, you weren't in on the play, obviously. They handed it to Adam, but kind of walk us through that whole thing. The huddle, the call, and then your guys as a team's reaction as he broke free.
So it was a TV timeout, and Coach Entz kind of was just sitting there, and all of us were like, we're going for it. Like, there's no other option. Like, we're going for it. And then he's like, you guys want to go for it? And we were like, hell yeah. Like, let's go for it. And it was a play that we put in this week. I was running it all week. Adam wasn't in to run it, but he did what he was supposed to do. Ran it, outran the guy, and they sent us the stats. I don't like to say this, but he was faster on that run than I was on my touchdown.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, he was moving.
Yeah, that was certainly something. What do you got? And this is something that I think might even be schematic from the other team's side, but you specifically and kind of your kickoff return group in seasons past has been excellent, and I think you're kind of still waiting to break that big one.
Yeah.
What's kind of going on there as far as what do you guys need to do better to improve kind of that starting field position? Because that was sort of an issue on Saturday. South Dakota State seemed to start in a little bit better shape than your offense.
Yeah, so that was my fault. One of the kicks I took out, I didn't really hear Demetri saying stay because I didn't know where I was on the field. And by the time he said stay, I was already bringing it out. But another one, the ball was just drifting to the side a lot. And I thought about fair catching it, but if I fair catch it and I muff it, the ball's down
right
where I pick it up. So I was like, I just got to catch it and go with it. But that was just the big thing. I think Vinatieri's a great kicker. I know they swapped him out a couple times, but they had great ball placement.
What was the call on your touchdown run? And kind of walk us through that one.
That was counter, 46 counter with the tight end coming back across to kick out. And all week, I've been kind of fast with my not being patient enough for the run.
Right. You're always fast.
Yeah. So when he called it, I intentionally lined myself up a little more to the left to give the tight end time to come through and kick out. He got the kick out. I cut it underneath, split the two defenders, and then just kicked out of that last tackle.
You've gone through 8 weeks now with Trey. You were here, of course, when Carson was here, and here when Easton was here, and you've seen a lot of really good quarterback play. Where's he at? You know, now having gone through, I wouldn't say most of your schedule, but a lot of it, and it's always, I think, easier to learn after a win than it is after you take a loss. And this current team has no losses.
Yeah. I have to remind myself sometimes, like, he's only a redshirt freshman. You know what I mean? Like, and I think a lot of people just take that for granted. In my opinion, he's going to be better than Easton was. And Easton says the same thing. Like, if he continues on the road that he is, he's going to be better. He might be the best that's played here at that position. But he's done a great job commanding the offense. I think he learned a lot from Easton and just being a great leader.
What have you seen from Youngstown State on film? What are some of the things they do well defensively? Obviously, you know, Pelini coaching them up.
Yeah.
And what are some things that have kind of maybe worked for you guys in the past against Youngstown?
They're a physical team, and that shows when they play us. It's always a four-quarter game. But on film, they come downhill. They will hit you. Sometimes they're undisciplined with their eyes. But other than that, they're a really well-coached football team.
Have you started to reflect at all on, you know, you being a fifth-year senior and having four games left on? And usually, you know, North Dakota State has plenty of games after the regular season, but has it started to sink in a little bit that you're kind of on your way home now?
It's kind of surreal. Before the season started, like when we were in fall camp, we had a team meeting. And even back then, I wasn't taking anything for granted, like every practice, every fall camp practice. And I just tried to get a message across to the freshmen, like, don't take this for granted, you know what I mean? Because I remember, like, it was yesterday when I was a freshman just coming in here, and now I'm a senior about to graduate and go to the real world, you know what I mean? So it's kind of crazy how fast it goes by. They keep you busy. Sometimes you hate it, but it's all for the better.
Absolutely. What are some things that you've noticed as far as the progression of this offense? Because as you mentioned, you know, you're a senior. I think Zeej, Garrett, Ben. But other than that, this is a really, really young group. Yeah. How much better is this group today than they were when you played Butler?
A lot. I think we're a lot more disciplined now with our eyes and technique and just playing well. And that's a testament to our coaches. No matter how well of a football game we play, there's always stuff to get better from. And we come in Monday throughout the week, and we're always working on the fundamentals, the stuff that you learn in fifth grade playing football. We're always working on the details.
What's your favorite call on offense, and what's your role on that play?
Ooh. Counter's probably one of them. Counter. I like inside runs a lot. A lot of people probably wouldn't expect that from me,
right. Being
a smaller back, but I do like getting in between the tackles. I do like power. I had trouble with power when I first got here because they don't like you bouncing it. And if I saw too many people inside when I was younger, I was taking it outside. I didn't care. But just that's the staple of NDSU football is power. And get a lot of bodies, get behind people, and just get to the end zone.
Why do you think Adam maybe doesn't get the credit he's due? I find that myself. It's just that the amount of things that are put on his plate every week, the tough yards that he gets, I'm not sure he's as – maybe regarded where I think he maybe should be.
I think he will be. I think the past couple seasons has been Lance and Bruce, you know what I mean? And I was kind of that third back, so Adam wasn't really looked at like that. But people forget Adam was the only back to stay healthy the entire year when us three were going. So he's always been a good back, and just seeing his progression, because he used to just kind of coast through his runs, but now you can see him playing a lot faster, and I feel like he's really stepped into his own.
Finish the sentence for me, and I'll let you go. NDSU wins on Saturday if...
execute the small details.
All right, we definitely want to thank the North Dakota State Sports Information Department for making Ty available to us, and of course want to thank Mr. Brooks for his time. Speaking of tailbacks, I've been trying to figure out this Joe Alessi kid, because 6.8 yards per carry is a lot. Most scrubs don't have 6.8 yards per carry. And so I've been trying to figure out just how good this kid is, because that early season slate of games is tough to look at. Like you mentioned, you know, Samford and I think Robert Morris, Duquesne was in there. Youngstown State did not play good defenses. They did not play against good teams in general. And so trying to figure out, you know, whether or not this kid is a world beater with almost 7 yards a carry, or, you know, what level is he truly playing at? I think the obvious thing would be to kind of take a look at North Dakota State's, not necessarily their equal, but sort of a team that, you know, has similar defensive keys. They run kind of a similar system. And Alessi did all right. 17 carries against South Dakota State, 72 yards, 4.2 a carry, didn't score. Nathan Mays had both the rushing touchdowns in that game, but just kind of a grinder. And that's actually where I kind of see Alessi, is more of that 4.2 kind of guy, that the grinder, the Adam Cofield type of back. And those guys are useful, and it's going to be important, honestly, for the Bison to corral him. In fact, the kid that he reminds me the most of on film is that tailback for South Dakota, whose name is it's escaping me, but the kid in the game that Carson broke his hand, that's the kid that he reminds me of.
From USD?
Yeah, the broken hand game, the tailback from USD, that
on the near sideline where we run out of, right? Yeah.
Right, and he got the big first down to set up the field goal. Absolutely, yeah. And for whatever reason, the kid's name is just escaping me right now, but he kind of, like I said, reminds me of Alessi. I think that they have a similar style. Trevor,
right, Boma. Yep.
That is the young man's name. Trevor Boma reminds me a lot of the way that Alessi plays, and I think they're going to have maybe a similar style or a similar type of game if they're, you know, going to beat NDSU. They're going to have a Trevor Boma game.
He's going to have to rush for... He's going to have another SDSU type performance, maybe even get into the triple digits. Simply because you have to establish a run game and take time away from NDSU having the ball. Beat them at what they do. Youngstown State's not going to out-athletic them. They're going to have to beat them at what NDSU does to people. And that'll be very tough. So the only way you do that is if you have a rusher that can find holes up the middle, find a way to get extra yards, and then get outside a time or two to get those defensive linemen running lateral. Because that's how you find gaps up the middle again, and that's how you get short yarded situations, and then you convert on third down. So if you can find a way to get the ball stripped from Alessi, I think that will hinder Youngstown, Iowa State, and obvious there, but that will hinder them hugely in this game, because he's their only threat, in my opinion, unless Mays happens to bust one off a good fake or something. But you look at a couple other Valley opponents that are probably playoff worthy. You got SIU. He had 54 yards and 12 attempts, and you and I, 8 attempts and 28 yards. So he's going to have to do a more South Dakota State-esque performance that he had earlier this year in order to give themselves a shot. And with him being a grinder, it's not out of the possibility, because sometimes guys that are like that personality. They can get up for games like this, and they'll have instances where, same thing with Mays, it's an opportunity for them to put a defining moment on their career, and they won't find a better opportunity than Saturday to do it. So they're going to do everything they can to capitalize. They'll certainly be up for it. Now, 28 yards against Northern Iowa doesn't quite do it for me. You know, if he's getting, I mean, granted, he only had 8 attempts. So he didn't have, it didn't seem like a huge chance to get into a rhythm. But you'll probably see, my guess, you'll see upwards of probably 18-ish carries in this game. And same thing with Braswell. If he gets in a rhythm early, that's when you got to start looking out for another 27-24 game like it's been the past couple of years.
Yeah, and I think the formula is kind of honestly what we've already talked about. If you're going to script, if you're, you know, you're a Hollywood guy and you're going to script Youngstown State victory over North Dakota State this weekend, that's what it looks like, right? It's a early bomb to Braswell to get up 7-0 and maybe, you know, get a turnover, kick a field goal, get up by 10, find a way to get up by 10, and then just sort of frustrate North Dakota State with Alessi picking up, you know, third and threes with inside zone or you know, quarterback option off of a read, whatever. But picking up third downs, milking the clock, getting down there, kicking more field goals, stuff I think that feels a lot like the South Dakota loss, and that's kind of the way that I think you would script a Youngstown victory. And then what happens if you get up? Okay, well then you rush the passer, and they've got some dogs again rushing the passer. Just really, really impressed with the two defensive ends. They've got a combined 16 sacks, and I believe that, Youngstown State has also played 8 games. That's, their total as well. So for Justice Reed and Malik Richmond to have 16 sacks between the two of them in 8 games, meaning they're as a duo, they're producing double-digit sacks week in, week out. Obviously, you know, we mentioned with a week beginning schedule, I would guess that the Duquesnes of the world and the Robert Morrises of the world were throwing the ball a lot with probably some not super talented tackles. But still, you've got to have Cordell Volson and I think Dylan Radins on their P's and Q's with Richmond specifically. But, you know, Justice Reed's a really, really good player as well. 12 tackles for loss, like I said, 9 sacks. 30 total tackles. The guy is both of the ends, both of the rushers are playmakers, and that was a huge key for Youngstown State when they were legit, when they had Rivers and Moss. I mean, that was absolutely big time for them. I think that the ability for those guys to rush the passer is going to be key to this game. Trev, do you have any other kind of keys to victory here for me?
Score early and hang on to the football. It's a game like this, you got it's really kind of what I anticipated at South Dakota State too, which that didn't necessarily go according to that plan, but you've got a team that's in a desperate situation being 1-3 in the Valley. They're going to need to be 4-4 to get to the playoffs. After NDSU, those final three, you're bound to drop one. So you essentially have to win this game to give yourself a shot. And if you win this game, you can win 2 out of your final 3 and you make the playoff. And
right, because the win over NDSU is a massive shot.
It's almost like having an FBS
move
to your resume. And then it shows the power of the Valley in general. And then no matter what the committee says, we don't take all the years into account. Well, you got a program that made the national title game 3 years ago and has an NDSU win on their resume. So this program, this team, they understand that, and they know that this situation is huge for them for the 2019 season. So you got a team that's going to get up for this game very early. They are going to come out hot. They are going to be adrenaline junkies. And South Dakota State was exactly that on Saturday. That stadium, we talked about it in the BRTV. I've been in that stadium. You know, they won't.
Never again.
Yeah.
Never and, going to happen again.
As much as they're trying, I see so many rallying cries on Twitter for them to do it again. I'm like, it ain't happening. Sorry. But when you have a team that is in that type of desperation, you know, we've seen crazier things happen. So they know that they have a shot, and it's a night game. There's a lot of sitting around. I think it's just staying focused on everything happens between the lines, and all that stuff dives down. And I said it early, against South Dakota State, guys were going to start cramping in the third quarter. Because anytime your adrenaline gets that high, it's like you just blow it early. You know, you just kind of lose all your juice, and people forget you actually have to play four quarters. And if you go into halftime and you've already kind of used up that super juice button already, it's over. And because you had to fight and claw and do everything in your power that you had in the tank to give yourself a shot to be within striking distance at halftime. And I saw it a lot in my career. I see it a lot to this day in rivalry games, in David versus Goliath matchups. And I'm somewhat expecting that on Saturday. I think Youngstown will come out hot. I think they probably will get a couple wins early, and they might even score early, quite possibly take the lead. Might even be tied at halftime. But when that second half rolls around, all of that fire dies down, and you still have to finish out a football game. And at NDSU, you're trained to do that. Mentally, you prepare for that every game, and these guys are used to that now. I think last week was a huge, huge wake-up call for them. They got to come out of that game with a win. They were very fortunate. They didn't play their best football, and I think they're eager to do that now. And you know, I don't want to give my score prediction now, but I think because of that, they'll weather the storm with the team that's going to give you everything they have, and then the true ability will come out in the second half.
No, we're go ahead, buddy. We've rounded third. Well, we're getting home.
I think
go
at
ahead.
Halftime, it's going to be, something like a 7-7, maybe a 7-10. I think it'll be low scoring again, like last week. And Bo Pelini's defense will be playing well. They'll have things figured out. They'll have things scripted. They keep the ball out of number five's hand. And second half's going to come out, and the dogs are going to be released. And NDSU will make their adjustments. And I think they pitch a second half shutout. Maybe Youngstown gets a late score. That's why I give them the nod with the 14, just being at home. So I'm going 38-14 with a heavy dose of second half domination.
All right, I'm not going to go that heavy. I need to see it before I believe it. I've got 28-17 Bison. We're 2 weeks in a row now without a dominating victory. And, you know, I'm not picking them to lose, obviously, but I think that you might need some dome sweet dome to sort of reset things offensively a little bit. Right now, I'm just not seeing that 30 or 40-point version of the NDSU offense, especially against, like I said, a top 20, a top 25 level defense in the country, a Pelini defense. I think this is a little bit of a grinder. 28-17 is where I'm at with this one mentally, but I think, you know, another Bison victory. I think they get to 9-0 and they continue that assault on that 33-game win streak that, of course, Trevor was a key part of. Trev, I want to thank you for your time tonight. I certainly appreciate it, getting this done on a Thursday evening, on a Halloween evening. Guys, we really appreciate you hanging in with us this long. If you're still listening, if there is any way for you guys to support Trevor and I in this venture and make sure that we have the budget to continue to bring you fantastic content like this, it is to become a member over at the Bison Report. You're going to get all of our recruiting scoops. I've got a VIP deal coming out today with Nick Raines, the brother of Dylan Raines. My film review stuff is VIP. We've got Trevor, former Bison Ron Dobrovich, former Bison Nate Zastro, VIP level stuff constantly. It's not like our competitors in this market are offering free content. Most of of their stuff is now behind a paywall as well. But what they're not giving you that we are is CBS All Access. CBS, the streaming service. In fact, the expensive version, the commercial free version, is now a part of your subscription to 24/7 at no additional cost. It is literally just a thank you. You'll have local TV, some premium content, some shows that aren't on TV. They are literally just on CBS Access. If you're a cord cutter, you're going to be able to see the local NFL game that you couldn't before. It's just a tremendous value. And right now we've got some fantastic specials over there on the Bison Report. Just go ahead and click sign up. It'll bring you through, you know, all of the different options that we have for sign up. Guys, thank you one more time for listening, and go Bison.